So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us as we talk about your taxes with Dale Kunin. Dale's been she's been with us a number of times. Always, I'm always amazed at the questions we get, which are very broad and wide-ranging, but even more amazed by her answers because she does a wonderful job. She's a CPA. She's a partner with the firm of Wegner LLP, CPAs and Consultants. Wegner's located in Madison. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. If you want to join in, if you got a question, I hope you will. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Dale Kunin, welcome back.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
Great to have you back. What kinds of questions, you know, here we are, it's getting close. What kinds of questions are you getting from your clients?
Well, the most common question at this time is, what happens if I can't get my taxes done? What do I do? So that's on people's minds. And the answer is that you can file for an extension. The IRS and the state recognizes the extension. However, the but is that it's an extension of the time to file your taxes, but it's not an extension of the time to pay your taxes. So if you have a balance due, you are not excused from not paying that. So you need to get some estimate of mm-hmm. what your taxes are and make that payment with the extension that you file to avoid an underpayment penalty when you do file your taxes. So
you still got to pay.
You still have to pay, and to pay, you still have to make a calculation. So you, mm-hmm. even if you don't have everything, you've got to do an estimate of what you think you're going to have, so mm-hmm. that you can get that in. And you can file an extension electronically, or you can mail in an extension, and if it's postmarked by April 15th, mm-hmm. it's valid. However, if you don't pay, then
you're going to get you're going to get hit.
You are, yes.
Okay. Well, you know what? Every one of our lines is filled. So let's go to the phones and Jim in Cedarburg first. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
And thank you for the show.
You bet.
Could the guest address options for applying a loss from stock sales, capital gains, to minimize taxes, either in 212 or in the future?
Well, did you sell stock that you had a loss in?
Correct.
So the way that it works for the IRS is that if you have a loss, if the net of all your gains and all of your losses is more than $3,000 of loss, you can only take $3,000 a year. You can take a loss to the extent of the gain without any limits, but you can't reduce your income by more than the $3,000 every year. So some people who made some sales in the last couple years that when the stock market was down have large losses that they tell me that they won't live long enough to see the benefit. But we're seeing much more this year, a lot of gains on stock sales, not so much losses. So you can use your loss. If you don't use it all up this year, you can continue to carry it forward and apply it against the next year.
And so, can you do that for several years?
Yes.
Or? Oh, you can.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hypothetically, if it was, say, $21,000, I could do it over the course of 7 years?
If you don't have other gains to offset it, yes.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. I'm sure that's a question that others would have. Julia in Lancaster, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Delighted to join you.
Thank you for calling.
I am a self-employed single mom who I think should qualify for earned income credit. I also have quite a few other deductions, including child care and so on. But when I worked out my taxes through the online software provided by the IRS, I was deemed ineligible for the earned income credit. So I'm wondering if you could discuss that and explain if there's kind of a sweet spot, if perhaps I would give up some of my deductions, that it might get me back that credit, please.
Well, the earned income credit is based on having earned income. So if you're self-employed and you made $10,000 and you had deductions of $10,000, then the IRS says that you don't have any earned income. So I'm not sure if you were ineligible because you had too much income or because you didn't have any income. So those would be, you would be ineligible if your taxable income was above a certain amount, and you would be ineligible if you don't have actually earned income. So you can't get that credit unless you have unless you have earned income.
Sure. And what is the cutoff point, the high point for that, please?
Well, it depends on your filing status and your how many children you have. And I'm not sure what the exact limits are.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. That's something, should be able to find that, though.
Yeah, I can look it up.
We'll look it up, or she could look it up herself, too, for that matter. Where would she find it? She'd find it in...
on the IRS website.
Yeah, the IRS
website. IRS.gov.
Okay. Brian in Madison. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a question about a charitable gift donation. My wife's father cashed out some long family stock, long held stock, and it was he broke the amount. I think it was around $18,000. He broke the amount into two checks. One was dated at Christmas this year, and one was dated for the first of the year in 2013. And I realized that the taxable limit or the untaxed limit of a charitable gift, I think, is $13,000 or
$14,000. I think you're getting confused between charitable gift and a gift from one person to another. So was this paid to a charity, or was it paid to family members?
No, it's a gift from father to daughter.
Yeah, so that's not a charitable gift. That is...
Okay. Okay.
That's a gift, and it's kind of passing part of your estate along. And so the limit is per person. So if he did break it up into two pieces, it was to be how much he could give to your wife. But if he considered it a gift to both of you, he could make gift twice as much.
So here's the wrinkle. We failed to deposit the check that was dated in December of 2012. Mm-hmm. And now we have both of these checks, and we're wondering if in fact which counts? Does it the date of deposit or the date on the check?
So you haven't cashed it even now?
Not yet, yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question. You could argue for constructive receipt, meaning that you had the check, but you just didn't cash it. So you can make a case for that. Or if you can also consider it a gift to both of you, and then there's no problem. Yes.
The checks were written to just her. It could be just as simple as asking him to rewrite some checks.
It really doesn't matter because you're in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
And so it's marital
marital property state.
Yes. So it can be considered a gift. And I don't know if you have children, but...
That's part of the reason we waited, because we were so busy with our new child.
Okay.
So it also could be considered a gift to the child. So there's lots of options to make the gift not a subject to any gift.
So we shouldn't worry about it then. Just go ahead and deposit.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Brian. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Almost forgot the number. My goodness. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. Post a question or comment there. We have a couple lines open, so we can get you on pretty quickly, actually. Let's go to Eric next, though, in Endeavor, Wisconsin. Eric, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling.
Good, I can have a two-part question. The first part is, it's my understanding that your property tax is based on your property value, and if that's correct, how come my property taxes have gone up when my property value has gone down since 2008?
Are you talking about your real estate taxes?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, real estate taxes are based on whatever your local municipality or town or county, on their method, if they use the fair market value, if they use an assessed value, if they, but then they have a mill rate. And so even if your value goes down, or the assessed value or what they're using for their basis goes down, the mill rate might be higher.
Go
and
up.
So that could be the reason. So the way that I usually describe it is that the actual county or local entity figures out how much money they need. And then they divide it by how much tax money they have available, and that's how they get their mill rate. And so the mill rate could be double, even if your taxes, if your property value is half.
I went through that same experience myself, to be perfectly honest, a few years ago.
With the city?
Yeah, with the city. So I understand where you're coming from, Eric, but you're... Unfortunately, Dale has done a perfect job of explaining the situation. So there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Ned in Wausau, we are on to you. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about making contributions to Roth IRA and how that affects your taxes. Now, well, I've been in recent years maximizing my Roth IRA contributions, and I'm getting near retirement in just a few years. But what I did this past year of 2012 is I also transferred a larger contribution with the knowledge that I'm going to have to pay tax on it to my Roth IRA, figuring that the tax-free status of that when I withdraw it later will be worth paying the extra tax now.
Yeah.
So first, what I'd like to know is how do I go about determining that, doing the calculations for that additional income? And second, do I have to pay a penalty because I made the contribution late in the year in December 2012, and there was no way to make quarterly payments all throughout the year for the additional income?
Yeah.
Okay, so the question about the contribution to the Roth, do you mean that you converted a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA? Is that what you did?
What I did is I made a larger-than-normal contribution above and beyond my regular contribution limits that I know I have to pay tax on.
Well, if you didn't,
it's from a taxable account,
from a savings account, maybe.
Yeah, that sort of thing—a taxable account with Fidelity Investments.
Well, you aren't eligible to make more than the $5,000 or the $6,000 if your income allows you to make a Roth. If you make a larger contribution, said you'd maxed it out. If you're over 50, then it would be $6,000 is the maximum for the year. And so, are you saying that you made a contribution of more than that?
Yes, I made a transfer from a taxable account to a Roth IRA with the knowledge that I would have to pay tax on it. There is that option. You can transfer the money in to a Roth IRA above the limits as long as you pay tax on it in the year of the transfer.
No, that's not true. The option is to roll over a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, and because the traditional IRA and its earnings haven't been taxed because it was a deduction from your income when you put it in and it grows tax-free to take it out, then you pay income taxes on that conversion from a traditional IRA, taxable IRA, to a Roth IRA. However, if you just put in more than $6,000 and it wasn't rolled over from an IRA account, then you have to withdraw the excess funds, and you have until April 15th to do that, because otherwise it's not taxes you'll pay, it's penalties. And you aren't allowed to have that money accumulate tax-free, which is what the Roth does. So everybody would love to put as much as they could in it from their after-tax accounts, but that's just not possible.
Okay.
So when you ask how you calculate it, the reason that you don't know how to calculate it is because you didn't get a 1099 from which you would have if you had made a conversion from a traditional IRA. So what you need to do is withdraw the amount that's over the $6,000.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks very much for calling. Excuse me. Appreciate your call. Talking about your taxes today with Dale Cunin, CPA and partner with Wegner LLP, CPAs and consultants in Madison. I'm Larry Miller. Veronica Rickard, our on-air producer. Thank you, Veronica. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today as we talk your taxes with CPA Dale Cunin with Wegner CPAs and Consultants in Madison. Always great to have her along, and certainly always great to have you listening in. You can join us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Joe and Hazelhurst sent us an email. Mother died in 2010, and she had a life estate. Should we have a back appraisal done? I this is not something that I know anything about.
I'm not sure if he means that she had a life estate in her home, and then it was transferred to her heirs. But if she did, then that paperwork should have been done
a long time ago.
Happened. So I guess
we need more information. There we go. Laura in Duluth, Minnesota. Hello.
Hi. I was just wondering, I was born and raised in Wisconsin. I'm Hispanic. And I moved to Minnesota about 14 years ago, and I've been working. And we've gone to the same lady for taxes for the past, I don't know, however many years I've been working.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first year where I had to show proof that I was legal, or it was weird that I've been a citizen.
A residency requirement?
I don't know. Because, see, my significant other, we take our taxes to the same place.
Yeah.
But I had to fill out a special form, and she had to vouch for me that she's known me X amount of years. Versus with him, he didn't have to. And he's, you know, of a different race.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that? Why?
Why that would be?
So I missed the beginning part. Are you a U.S.-born citizen?
Yeah. I was born in Wisconsin, raised in Wisconsin.
No, I don't know why.
Doesn't make any sense.
It was really weird, and I just thought, what is...
Did you ask her why she was...
Yeah, I asked her, I said, well, this is weird, Nancy. And she says, yeah, I don't know. It's something that they're requiring us to do. And I said, well, why is it that I'm getting it and I'm Hispanic and my husband or my partner, he's Native American, and he didn't have to show his proof of being born here, you know?
So maybe it was the firm that she works for?
She's independent. She works out of her home, you know.
So it sounds like it might have been a state requirement.
I'm not aware of that one.
Okay, I didn't.
Sounds
know
like some sort
at...
of discrimination to me.
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah, Yeah, so then, of course, I have to pay extra for the form to have this processed, you know?
Oh.
And I just thought, well, I didn't know if this was something new with the whole Obama trying to, you know, legalize certain people that have been here so many years, but I was born here, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't understand it, and I didn't know if you guys had more information on that.
Sorry, I don't.
Oh, no, okay. I wish we did. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'd make sure I had my birth certificate handy somewhere,
yeah,
given that. That's terrible.
I don't think Minnesota has.
Has anything like that. No. Well, let's go to Crystal in Madison, find out what's on her mind. Hi, Crystal.
Hello. When you receive your Social Security check, they deduct this Medicare B as, you know, part of insurance.
Yes.
And I was told that on the federal return, you cannot deduct that. But on the Wisconsin return, you can. So I did my TurboTax deal, and there's absolutely no place where I could enter that figure. Is that true that I can deduct it from Wisconsin taxes?
There is a provision to... as a subtraction to your federal adjusted gross income for a portion of your health insurance premiums that you pay if you don't have an employer and you're paying your own health insurance, or you have an employer and they're not paying your health insurance, and it is.
I found that. Yes.
It is just yes. It is a Wisconsin-specific subtraction from income, and it goes right on page one. I can't speak to how TurboTax handles that, but there is such a subtraction.
You wouldn't find it on the federal side. You'd have to get to the state.
No, I was at the state, and I did find that, but I also pay a substitute insurance, and I deducted that from in there. And since my income in my business is not that high, it only allowed me to deduct part of that. So then would that mean that both of those deductions have to go in the same line, and then it still would only allow me to deduct this small part of it?
Yes.
That mm-hmm. my business is allowing me, because my business, you know,
self-employed?
Yes. I'm an artist and I do art fairs, but, you know, everything is kind of down now. And so the income is not that high. And so it deducted a big part of that that I could not claim.
Well, yeah. If you're self-employed, you can deduct on the federal return, you can deduct your health insurance premiums on as an adjustment to gross income. So if you are self-employed, there is a way to deduct it on the federal return. And then there's no adjustment or subtraction on the Wisconsin return, because Wisconsin return starts from federal adjusted gross income, and so it mm-hmm. would have already been subtracted. However, you have to have a net income from your self-employment for to get that deduction. So if you have a loss or you broke even, then you wouldn't get it on the federal.
Yes, it only allowed me to go as high as my net income.
Yes,
that's correct. Term. Yep, that's exactly the way it is.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thanks, Crystal, for calling. Appreciate it. And Carrie in Green Bay is next. What's on your mind, Carrie? Hi.
Hello. I think it is Jerry.
Oh, Jerry. Sorry.
Yes. A quick question. Our 18-year-old daughter will be starting college in fall, and if I start a 529 EdVest account, is there a way to get the state deduction if you file the short form? I see it on the long form on line 11, but I don't see it on the short form.
You have to file the so-called long form, because it's a subtraction from your federal adjusted gross income. and there isn't a provision for that on the short form of Wisconsin.
Okay.
Because it's just a Wisconsin deduction. It's not. And it's only a Wisconsin deduction if you invest in the Wisconsin-sponsored plan.
Correct. So if I file a short form for federal, can I opt to file the long form for state just to get that deduction?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep,
okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Lenora in Mauston. Hi.
Hi, I have a question. How do I file for homestead if my landlord will not fill out the homestead paper?
I am not exactly sure. I think there is a provision in the instructions for the preparing the homestead credit. There is something in there about what to do if your landlord won't sign the form. I don't know exactly what that is, but there is some recourse to...
And that would be in the Wisconsin regulation?
It would be in the instructions for the Schedule H, the homestead credit.
Okay. So you should be able to go online and find that.
Yes, at wisconsin.dor.gov.
WisconsinDOR.gov, and if you don't have access to a computer, you can always go to the library.
Yes.
It's a great place to go because they're all the most helpful people in the world.
You can actually also call the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. They will. You have to stay on hold, but they will answer your questions.
Yeah. There you go, Lenora. Thank you for calling. And Dick in Danbury, hello.
Hello. As I understand it, there's a new tax going in as a result of the federal health care law this year that on the sale of property, which would include or sale of assets, I guess would be a better way to put it. I haven't read the so-called Obamacare law, but from what I've heard, it applies to the sale of homes. Now, do you know offhand if that is a 3% as I understand, it's a 3% or around 3%, and is that on the sale or is that on the profit, or is it on the gross amount of the sale of the assets? And so, I guess the question, if it's on the profit from the sale of the assets, then. In terms of real property, whether it be your home or whatever, then we've got to start keeping records again of improvements so that you've got a net number rather than a gross number. And how far back can you go to on improvements?
Okay. First of all, there's no change in the rules for selling your primary residence. So you can exclude the gain of $250,000 if you're single or $500,000 if you are married, filing jointly. So there is not a change on that. Excuse me?
Not due to the health care law?
No, not on the sale of your personal residence.
Oh, okay. But other property then?
Well, other property, the record keeping of the for the sale of other property doesn't change. Any other property that you sell, whether it's rental property or stock or whatever, you do need to keep track of when you bought it, how much you paid, and if you added any additional money to it. So the record keeping on that doesn't change.
But the tax, the medical care tax is on the net number, not the gross number?
Well, there's an additional tax for starting this year for people who make more than $200,000 or $250,000.
$250,000, I think it is.
And that's like an extra Medicare tax. And that's...
No, I'm talking about the one that goes into effect as a result of the like I said, the Obamacare legislation.
No.
It's contained within that legislation.
I don't think...
You're not familiar with it.
I'm not.
I don't think it's there.
I'm not familiar with all the details of the new taxes that are going to be a lot of the regs for 2014 haven't been even
thought
issued.
Of.
Well, they have, but
they haven't been issued.
Right, but it's the changes are in sales in income for higher earning people who earn more.
No, this one is on the sale of every asset, on all assets.
No, I just honestly, it's not something we can help you with. I don't think it's the case. I honestly don't think it's the case. You may want to. I don't even know where you'd go for that. I would go to the IRS, I guess, and call and ask. I'd go online. I'd go and phone the IRS and
you could
ask.
Phone the IRS, but be prepared for a long wait right now.
Oh, I suppose. I suppose. But the long answer, the short answer, Dick, is we can't help you.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Rose in Berlin, let's go to you. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. My question is the federal government way behind on issuing the refunds? Do you know?
Well, I have had people who have been experienced delays in getting their refund. And I've had people who are getting their refund right away. So if you filed electronically and asked and then requested a direct deposit, I'm not seeing those delayed. I'm thinking of one client who we don't know why he hasn't gotten his refund yet. And you can check on the IRS website. They have Where's My Refund?
Mm-hmm.
Section, and we keep checking, and it says that the tax return is being processed. So I don't know what's up with that, but I have not heard that other people are experiencing any particular delay, but it does take longer if you file a paper return, and it does take longer if you didn't request direct deposit.
Okay, I sent them in almost 6 weeks ago. And I have checked on the 800 number and also on the website for Where's My Refund,
mm-hmm.
and it says cannot provide information. Does that mean they never received it?
Did you file paper?
Yes.
Yeah, they probably don't have it in their system yet. Because when you file paper, somebody has to actually key it into their
computers.
System. Yeah, so that would... explain the delay, and because you're not getting the message that your return is being processed or that it's in process, then your return is not in process yet. So either they haven't received it or they received it and haven't
gotten around to
keyed it in yet.
Okay. Should I, if I don't get it within like the month of April?
I think if I were you, I would phone the IRS and be prepared to wait because it could be that they didn't receive it. And so you want to see if they have any record of having it logged in. That's the downside of filing the paper return. So if you didn't have it delivered, certified or take it over to the IRS office, then it's kind of just depending on the U.S. mail to get it there.
Yep.
Okay.
There you go, Rose. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Finally, have some open lines. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a tax question for Dale Kunin, our guest today, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. You can post a question right there. Karen and Sauk, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question was, I've been on disability. It's just been a year now. And there are no taxes taken out. And I was wondering if taxes are supposed to be or should be taken out, and or if there is like a certain income limit. This is my only income. That they, you know, if it's higher or lower, if they take taxes out a certain number amount.
Is the disability that you're getting, is that as a result of having an insurance policy, or are you talking about being on the Social Security?
Social Security disability for illness.
Social Security, you have to ask them to you have to proactively request having taxes taken out. It is taxed the same way that Social Security benefits are. So if that's your only income, it's unlikely that it would be taxable. But the Social Security benefits are taxed based on your other income, and at most 80% of it is taxed for the IRS. So, and it's not taxed from the state.
Okay, so if that's my only income, and what do I do? How do I act or talk? Who do I talk to find out about getting it taken out? So, you know, if I don't get a tax bill next year that I have to pay in or something like that.
You have to go to the Social Security office or contact the Social Security office, and they would have a form for you to fill out to specify withholding that you would want if that's the case. If you, in fact, are going to have taxable income.
They may tell you you won't.
How will I know I have to go through there to find out if I don't have taxable income? Or do you know if there's like a number factor?
Well, how much did you get for 2012? Did they send you, you should have gotten a
1040 or something? Well, it wouldn't be 1040.
It's a SS.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a year, just like this month. So I didn't get anything.
Okay, well, they still should have sent you something.
Oh, okay. Well, that will tell me then.
Well, that's the total that you would have.
Okay.
It would show, and then you can calculate if you even have a filing requirement.
Yeah.
Well, it's like $12,000 a year is what I would be getting.
That's the total?
Yes.
So
I didn't know if you knew.
So you get a, and you're alone?
Are you single?
Yes.
It's unlikely that you have a filing.
You should have a deduction, your own deduction,
yeah.
And then
I think standard deduction. And yes, so there wouldn't be
probably more than 12,000.
Well, yes, and not all 12,000 of it would even be subject to it. So I think you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, because I just was afraid that. If they weren't taking it out, and then all of a sudden I have to pay $500 in or something like that would happen. I just don't know how it works that well.
So,
thank you so much.
Karen, thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. And thanks to Dale Kunin. She's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. She's a CPA partner with Wegner CPAs and Consultants in Madison as we talk your taxes here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking your taxes today with Dale Kunin of Wegner CPAs and Consultants in Madison. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening in. We have some emails, or at least one here that I wanted to get to. My husband collected unemployment all of 2012 and had no tax deductions. I want to file separately, hoping this will help me, who worked. I want him to pay the taxes on his income. He separates our earnings. I have my bank account, and he has his.
So if you are in Wisconsin, it doesn't say if she's in Wisconsin.
My guess is yes.
Wisconsin is a marital property state, community property state. You would have had to file a legal agreement to opt out of marital property, which most people haven't done. So, absent that, you could file separately, but you have to combine your income and your expenses 100%, and then split it 50-50, not his and yours. And so I married filing separately is almost always a less favorable filing status for a couple than married filing jointly. So you're just going to have to combine it.
And probably write a check.
Mm-hmm.
Bob in Hayward says siblings are caring for a 102-year-old mother. Can she be claimed as a dependent?
She can be claimed as a dependent by one person, so one of you, but only if her income is less than $3,800. So if she has any income, pension, whatever.
Social Security?
Yeah, then you cannot claim her as a dependent. And that's usually the case unless she's, unfortunately, that's the rule.
And Joe in Washburn, the called regarding the other caller about the 3% tax. You remember a few calls ago? This apparently was some fraudulent information circulating on the internet on this 3% tax information that the call. So it was something on the internet that, got people believing that it was true, but it definitely is not. So, and that's why you didn't know anything about it, because it doesn't exist. Diane in Dubuque, Iowa. Hello.
Hello, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really just wanted to commend the IRS for their service on the phone and online. So many questions people ask, I know it takes time, but going line by line, either through the book or online, they've really tried to make it very, very helpful. And in my experience in calling the IRS, yes, there may be a wait, but you actually get a real person, and they really do refer you to a real person that has specific training in your question. And I think it's kind of sad to think that we have an image that they're really heartless, because I've had them go just line by line, helping me and making it very logical.
That is good news. I'm glad to hear that, Diane. I really am. And Dale, your experiences, of course, you would probably have not called the IRS.
No, we talk to the IRS quite a. We do have a practitioner's line that we can call, but we do talk to the IRS, and you do get a person, and that's the person's job is to
know that
help
stuff.
You.
Mm-hmm.
And the only complaint I hear from clients is that they're on hold a long time and people don't like to wait. But I agree with you that they and I'm sure they'd be happy to hear your endorsement. They're feeling a little bombarded at this time. So
yeah, that's great. Thanks, Diane.
Tell people to just put their phone on speakerphone and do their housework, and they'll get back to them. But actually, just having the paper booklet, I think, is easier for some people, because if you see it in print and go just line by line, they're trying to make it understandable.
Yeah, yep, they are. Thanks, Diane. Appreciate it. And Chris in Waseca, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
My son is disabled, and he's on SSI. He gets only $92 a month in Social Security. And we've been trying to find out if he has to file state and federal on that. His total amount per year is $10,460. And if he does have to file, we can do that. But also, if he doesn't have to file, can he still file homestead credit?
The answer is he probably doesn't have to file.
Mm-hmm.
And he could. Are you claiming him as a dependent?
No, he's living on his own.
So, yes, he can apply separately for the homestead credit, but with the homestead credit, they count all your income, taxable and not taxable.
Right.
So, but yes, you don't have to that's a separate, it's a separate return. It doesn't have to go with the actual income tax return. So,
With that low of an income, then he doesn't have to file state and federal?
If it's all from Social Security, that's correct.
Okay, okay. Yeah, because only $92 a month of that is actually Social Security for him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I do have an answer for you on the gentleman who called about his property taxes in that. A lot of people, my husband's a tax assessor.
Okay.
And for property taxes, and a lot of people call him this time of year, and then when their property taxes come due. And he encourages them to go to their school board meetings and to go to their county board meetings in their villages and that, and find out where their money is going so that they have some say-so in that and they understand what's going on in their community. And he's also been very helpful trying to find ways to save them money, too, when they call and find out, you know, if they have property that they can put under DNR for woodlands and that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
good for him.
Helps.
Yeah,
I hope that helps.
Thank you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Thank you much for your answer.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And my dad used to do that way back.
Oh,
when.
Really?
He taxed went in the
revenue
in the township, and he did the assessments on the homes and that. Yeah, long time ago, but he did. Kim and Monroe. Hello.
Larry, my question is about a form that doesn't make sense. Like there's any of those. it's for gift and generation skipping transfer tax.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I bought a farm this year, and my parents made the loan for me. You know, put up a lot of my own money. But they loaned me some, and then we were told that they could gift me each $13,000 a year so that I wouldn't have to pay interest back to them on that part of the loan each year.
That's true.
So then they told my mother that she had to get this form. And this is the form she picked up. And everything on here is about the tax we owe. None of it is about a gift that is not taxed, the part that's not taxed.
Yes, in fact, the giving the $13,000 per person it can happen without filing any gift tax return. That's the whole point of that limit, that you can do $13,000 per person per year, and it's you don't need this form. There's no other reporting requirement.
Okay. And then now the rest of it, outside of the $26,000 they gifted me for the first year, I'm paying interest on the rest of the mortgage to them. Is there a special form for that?
No, but if you're paying interest to them, then they need to report that as income, and technically you need to send them a 1099 saying that. Do they just lend it to you? It's not secured by the money that they lent you isn't secured by the property. It's just a loan, not a mortgage.
Yeah, it's a loan.
So they need to.
They're not going to foreclose on me if
no.
I.
No. Okay.
So they need to report the income, and if it's a personal loan and it's not secured by the mortgage, there's nowhere for you to deduct that.
Okay, so, but I could say that it's secured by the mortgage, or do we need some contract or something for that?
That would require
a contract.
A contract.
Yes.
Okay.
There you go. Because you'd be able to use that as a
mortgage interest.
Mortgage interest deduction on your taxes.
Okay.
If you itemize.
Right.
If you itemize.
Yeah, at first year of working this farm, I'm not sure I'm going to need to do that during a drought. Might not need to itemize much this year.
Now, Kim, what kind of farm you got?
Well, you know me. I've got the goats, the green goats.
Oh, the goats. All right.
Yeah, the goats paid for for a good chunk of this farm, but they couldn't pay for all of it yet. They're working on that. So, yes, the goaties are out here. There's a, I've got 44 new babies and on the way. And, yeah, so we're working on their income.
All right. Well, that sounds great, Kim. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, and I hope you have to file a great big tax. You know, I hope you have to pay a lot of taxes sometime because you're making a lot of money. Dale Kunin, our guest today, CPA partner with the Wagner LLP CPAs and Consultants in Madison. She'll be with us right up until 12:30 today to answer your questions. So you stay with us. News next coming up here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and I'm learning a lot today about taxes, and I hope you're learning a little bit too. And I hope that if you have some questions, you'll join in with those questions about your taxes. It's not very long. Well, what's the day? You know, just another 10 days or so, and you're going to have to be sending a check or at least sending your forms in. Dale Kunin here to help you. She's a CPA partner with Wagner LLP in Madison. They are consultants in Madison. Great to have her with us once again. You can join in if you have a question for her at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question or comment there. Click like while you're there. We'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. Back with Dale right after the news. Taking a look at your taxes today, Larry Mueller here, my guest Dale Kunin, CPA and partner with the Wagner LLP CPAs and Consultants in Madison. She comes by every so often to visit with us about the taxes. And here we are with just less than 2 weeks to go. And I know there are questions out there. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Pat in Elm Grove has been patiently waiting. Let's go to Pat. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We bought shares of Motorola in 1995, and my husband didn't keep the yearly end statements, and now it got bought out. How do I figure the cost basis of those shares that were bought by the dividend reinvestment?
So you reinvested dividends to buy
more shares.
Well, you know how many shares you have. The only way to do that, if you don't have a broker who was tracking that, is you're going to have to do research online. You can get what the dividends were paid per share each year, and add those in, and you'll just have to have a running
figure out how many shares you had each year.
Each year, and that spreadsheet will it isn't hard; it's just tedious.
Yeah.
But you can look on. There's finance websites. You can Google the stock, and you can find what the dividends were issued every year. And
yep,
if you know that they were reinvested every year, then you will have that information.
So the dividend, yeah, okay.
It's not the most pleasant experience in the world to have to do that, I don't think. And I would advise your husband to keep the records, or you to keep the records
right,
a little more carefully, perhaps.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Jerry in Port Washington, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have some savings bonds from the 1980s that were purchased then, and we cashed them in this last year. And I'm trying to figure out how to report that interest on the form.
So you had not reported interest on these while you were holding them?
That's correct.
So you should have gotten a 1099 with the interest that was that you were paid out. Did you get that?
I got one form.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have any 1099 written on it. It lists the four bonds we cashed in.
Yes.
just says bonds redeemed at the very top, operator 1006. And it's dated January 7th.
So do you know how much you paid for the bonds?
Yes.
And you know how much they were redeemed?
Yes.
So the difference is interest.
Right.
So you report that on Schedule B for interest income.
E?
B, as in boy.
Okay.
Yes.
As in interest income.
Yeah.
Yes. And then if you didn't get a if you didn't get a form that's a 1099-B, as in proceeds, then you don't have to worry about reporting the redemption of the bond, which would go on a Schedule D. But you just need to report the interest that you that accrued on that bond, the difference between what you paid for it and what they gave you when you cashed it out.
So there's no waiver of taxes on a certain amount under these savings bonds?
I'm sorry?
So there's no what?
Interest.
Yes.
The interest is the difference.
The interest is the difference.
Just the difference?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you paid $25 and it was redeemed at $50, your interest is $25.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Good luck. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling, Jer. And Lee in Wisconsin Dells. Hi.
Hi. My question was, my wife and I got separated last year in July. So I called her this year in February to ask if she wanted to file jointly or separately. And she said that she had already filed separately and used the two kids, which are her kids, my stepkids, as a deduction. So normally I get a lot more deductions if I file, itemizing versus personal deduction.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when I did H&R Block, they said, well, if I file with itemized deductions, then that takes away her personal deductions unless she files as a head of household.
Yes. So what's your question? If you aren't divorced yet, and if you don't have a legal separation that opts you out of this marital property law, community property law, then even if you chose not to file jointly, if you file separately, you have to split. You have to total your income and total your expenses, and split them out 50-50. So,
she lives in Louisiana. I live in Wisconsin.
And where did you live during your marriage?
We lived in Louisiana.
I think Louisiana is also a marital property state. So the income that you have and that you earned was earned in Louisiana?
Half of mine was there, half of it was here.
I think Louisiana, I don't know, I'd have to look it up. Louisiana might also be a community property state. I don't know if it is. So I can't really advise you about Louisiana law. I can only tell you what the rules are in Wisconsin.
Yeah, better.
But it sounds like you have to file a return in Louisiana this year.
Yep. And so you need to know if it's a marital property state, because if it is,
you're subject to the same.
Yep, subject to the same kinds of things that you would be subject to here in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. if I'm getting that right. Yeah. So there you go, Lee. You got a little work to do yet, and not a lot of days.
Right.
To do it. So good luck. Appreciate the call. We have Denise in Fox Lake with a question. Hi, Denise.
Hi. This is really a question I'm asking on behalf of my son. He's a college student, and he started raising a few cattle through 4-H, and he's continued to keep those cows and raise the calves. Now, he has a summer job that he, and so he files taxes every year, but just on his summer job income, is there a point where he's going to need to file a farm tax return as a farmer?
Well, is he earning money from his farming activities?
Yes. I don't know if his expenses are under or over his income, but he does. He raises the cattle, and then he sells them, mostly to individuals for quarters and halves of beef, but once in a while he sells one to the cooperative.
So the answer is that if he has income from these sales, then he needs to report that on his tax return. And
okay.
If his gross income is $1,000, then he would have to file the form that that reports the expenses that would reduce those. But just because it's kind of a cash-based business doesn't mean that he doesn't have to report it. And then you just make the decision, is this a farming activity or is this a hobby of his?
But either way, he still has to, if he has income from it, he has to file.
He should be reporting the income if he, yes. And there's different rules for whether it's a hobby or a farm.
Okay. And so am I going to find some extra information about that online at the IRS website, or where can I see what those rules are? Where do I find that?
Well, in the instructions for filing a Schedule F, or in the instructions for filing a 1040 under hobbies.
Those are the two places. One or the other.
Okay. Good. Schedule F and 1040. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Robert emailed, his wife died in 2012. Under community property, he inherited most of her property, but she had a stock portfolio that was started with her inherited money, and she wanted that money to go right straight to the kids. She failed, however, to file a beneficiary form with the brokerage house, so upon death, the account was retitled as an estate account. Problem is that the stocks and funds were not converted into cash and distributed to the kids for several months after her death. Can I declare these earnings on our last joint tax form, pay the taxes, and be done with it? Or do I, as executor, have to provide K-1 forms to the kids who will have to?
For anything that happened after her death, you can't put that on your joint 1040. It depending on how large her estate is, I don't know if it went through probate or if there's some trust involved, but you may have to do the 1041, which is for the estate, which would be those K-1s. So you probably need to consult with someone who has expertise in this kind of things and to get all your ducks
There's still a lot more information that Dale would need to have. Craig and Cameron, thank you for calling. Hi.
Craig? Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question about my son has rental property and he lives out of state, so I currently take care of it for him. And for the last 3 years, our accountant, my son has made over, he was single at the time, now he's married. But for the last 3 years, our accountant told me that he made too much money to use his rental property for, he couldn't use the deductions because he made over like $225,000 or something like that every year.
Mm-hmm.
But he also told me that he won't lose that. Those deductions at some point, if he ever goes below that threshold, he'll be able to use those deductions. And my question is my accountant right about the over $225,000 mark that he can't use those deductions? And then my other question is, how long does this stay? Or, I mean, 10 years from now, if he goes underneath that threshold or that amount, can he use that those deductions then?
So, yes, yeah, so what you're talking about is a passive activity loss. So he, if his earnings are such that he cannot take the passive loss, which is how the rental properties are treated, those are carried forward indefinitely. And if there isn't an opportunity to use them against other passive income, or because his his income goes lower, then upon disposition of the property, when the property is sold, you get to take all, in that year, you get to take all of those losses. So there is an end in sight.
Okay. All right, cool. I guess I was just curious as to whether the accountant was right about
yes.
that.
Yes, your accountant was right.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. And Mara in Bosque Belle, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, first of all. Second, my husband is a pastor and I'm a student, and we just got married in October, but filing this year, we knew that my husband didn't pay enough into his taxes for last year. So we knew we were going to have to pay. However, the amount that had come back from getting our taxes done is a little bit more than we were expecting. So we only have about half of what we are able to pay right now. We were just wondering what the suggestion is of if we ask for an extension or use installments, or if the best way is just to pay on a credit card and pay that off, which we'll have it in the next 2 months. We just don't know what we should do right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't have the cash right now, I don't know the totals that are involved, but I think I understood you to say that you don't have the cash right now, but you will have it in just a few months.
Right.
So
like if we owe, about $6,000 and we have $3,000 right now, and I'll have $5,000 by the end of the month. So we're just a little bit of wiggle room as into that, but we didn't know what the best option was for us to proceed.
Well, I think the best option probably is to file an extension and pay with that extension the $3,000 that you have right now. And then when you have the rest of the money, you file your return and you'll have some underpayment penalty, but it's more like interest, and it's probably less than you would have to pay if you put it on the charge card, because they charge you a fee to put it on the credit card besides the interest you pay. And
right.
And so that's what I would suggest at this point.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Good luck. Teresa in Plymouth. Hi.
I'm calling about, I'm not sure what they're called, but there's savings accounts that you can create, and I don't know how they work, but they're for high deductible health insurance plans.
Yes.
And you can, do you deduct that from your taxes, and then how do you go about doing it?
So if you don't have a health insurance plan from work, and you need to have your own. So this is for just for an individual policy. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So you need to get first thing you have to do is get a policy that qualifies, and then you can work with the insurer to set up the health savings plan, or you can find a bank who will act as the custodian. It used to be very difficult to find a bank that would act as a custodian, and this was when they first started these HSAs. I used to refer people to Mellon Bank because they would do it, local banks weren't. But I understand now that more banks will do that. And then you make rules for how much you can put in, that you can put in, and you can deduct that from your taxes. And it can stay in there and grow tax-free, and you can take it out for medical expenses without paying any taxes on it. And it can continue to grow if you don't have medical expenses. It's not one of those use-it-or-lose-it kind of things. And eventually, if you are fortunate and it accumulates, it's kind of like an IRA account that you can take it out when you retire, and you would pay taxes on it if it wasn't for health care. So you have to get a qualified plan, and so that starts with doing some insurance hunting. And some of those qualified plans come all in one package with handling the savings account part, and they charge you for that because you're not paying the big bucks for the premium. No. So they're charging for that. And if you can find a bank that will act as the custodian for the health care savings, they have to do paperwork just like you would for an IRA. So banks were not set up to do that, but it's more common now.
So the money that I put into the account, I report that on my taxes?
Yes, you can deduct, yes.
And that's deductible?
Yes, and then if you take money out, you will get a 1099 showing that you had a withdrawal from your savings account, your health savings account, and you just need to say on that year's return that you spent it on medical expenses, qualified medical expenses, and if you didn't, then you have to pay taxes on it.
Okay. Okay, great.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we've got a question here from Dan in Elk Mound. My wife and I gifted my daughter and her husband a sum of money to purchase a home in March of 2012. I noticed you can gift $13,000 gift tax free. We completed a gift affidavit through the bank, and I have a copy of it. Where do I deduct this on my tax form, Schedule A or another form? Can he deduct it?
No.
No.
The fact that it was a gift means that it was no strings attached, nothing that needs to be paid back, and it's a gift. There's no
tax event.
No tax advantage in terms of giving a gift. So,
if you'd given $13,000 to a nonprofit corporation, then that's a different story.
A charitable contribution. Nope, it's just a gift from your home to hers.
Mary in Brookfield, do you have a quick question?
I hope so. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My son lives with us. He's in school. He made $16,000 last year, and he also had paid some interest off on his school loans. Does he deduct that on his tax form, or do we deduct it because we have him as a dependent?
Hmm. Well, depending on your income, you may not be eligible for that deduction. It's phased out for your income, and so if he took out the loan and he's making the payments,
mm-hmm.
He can
have to be on his form.
See if he can put it on his form. If
would that be a 1040X or EZ? And that's not the EZ, is it?
No, he would. It would be a long form, a 1040.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Dale, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Well,
and you'll come
Larry.
Back sometime and be with us again, won't you?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Not on April 15th, though.
That's got to be the busiest day of the year, isn't it?
It's crazy, but if we're not done by then, but there's a lot of people picking stuff up and calling and asking questions and filing an extension. So it's a busy kind of crazy day, but...
relief. Thanks, Dale. Dale Kuhnen, our guest today. She's a CPA with Wegner, CPAs and Consultants in Madison. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.